Reading from the Jiva Dhamma, Pramaya, Jivas and Maya. I think it's chapter 16 or 17. I'm not sure exactly which. I don't have the number of the chapter. Omega Tamarandasya Gyananjana Shalakaya Taksur Mulitam Yena Tasmai Sri Gurave Namaha Sri Chaitanya Manobhistam Stapitam Yena Bhutale Sayambhu Pakadamayam Vidati Sapadantikam Anchakalpa Tarubhyascha Upasindu Bhayevacha Patitanam Pavanebhyo Vaishnavebhyo Namo Nama Sri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Sri Advaita Gadadhar Srivasade War Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, 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 Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. So greetings from Govardhan. I'm back here from Vrindavan. They're having the Japa retreat. I went to the Kirtan. It's on the other side of the hill. It's about an hour walk, or there's vehicles here now. Beautiful Kirtan. Of course, so many Kirtan luminaries. Of course, Badahari is really, really off the charts. It's so wonderful. So that was really nice. And I'll be here for another day and then back to Vrindavan to Parikram with my good friends from the Middle East. So we're progressing in the Jiva Dharma. I find this particular section very, very stimulating. Jivas and Maya. It's Pramaya. Pramana is the means of knowing, and Pramaya is what is to be known. And we're in the story of Rajanath, recently initiated, who was formerly a logician. And his enlightenment forms the rest of the text. Of course, the story is about people coming to Krishna consciousness, the generation of after Lord Chaitanya, and who they are and the doubts they raise and the answers to those questions completely cover the whole gamut of tattva or philosophical subjects in Krishna consciousness. Now, Babaji Maharaj is answering his questions about origin. Why am I here? Who am I? Plus, those were so enlivening questions for Babaji Maharaj to hear. Because until you come to that point, you have no opportunity to perfect your existence, which is sojourning through universe to universe to unlimited species of life until by the mercy of Guru and Krishna, one gets the Bhakti Lata Bij, the experience of the absolute reality, the highest reality of connection with God. And the faith in that is life's goal. So, who am I? Well, I'm a jiva, and the previous chapter discussed how the jiva comes from tatastha shakti, the marginal potency. That somehow or other, among all the things that God creates, he creates a living entity who has free will to embrace one of two things: the true conception of life, I am the servant of the absolute center, God, and the illusory concept of life, the embracing or adoption of a thought or an identity which we're not, which is I am the center of existence, I am the doer. And somehow we're right on the borderline between two potential existences, the material and the spiritual, just like the tata means the shore. Shore can be dry land, the shore can be covered by water. That exact point is either one. And somehow we're open to suggestions. And that's why it's so important to hear the Shastra, so we can get, in terms of our identity and goal of life, we can get good ideas rather than bad ideas. And good ideas will lead to sublimity. So now, this Vrajanath used to be a logician, and he's very bright. He really wants to tackle head on this reality, which appears to be at odds with a all-powerful and omniscient Lord. This reality that we suffer, and we suffer like hell. Why does God do this? He's the absolute controller. Why does he allow this? This particular question, as I mentioned before, has a whole philosophical school that deals with it called theodicy. Reconciliation of the existence of God with the reality of evil that causes suffering in this world. In fact, I just read an article called by a theologian called The Atheist's Best Argument. And the atheist's best argument is this. And he went through it. As a theologian, he went through it and discussed the particular answers that are given, even by great xenophologists like Alvin Plantinga and... And he showed how difficult it is to reconcile. Okay, a little problem here, but not a major problem. The problem is my battery's running out. I'll just have to shift a little bit and plug it in. 1 second, please. You know what? I think I have a hard copy here. It's chapter 16, Jiva and Maya. Just so fascinating. Hopefully I can Okay, good. We can proceed. So I'm just saying that this is a particularly challenging. Of course, in my opinion, there are more powerful arguments for the existence of God. There are more powerful arguments for the existence of God. And this is a challenge. See how Bhaktivinoda Thakur tackles it in a very unique way. But my faith is not based on just logic, although I certainly affirm the reasonability of God's existence. It's based on the experience of God's existence. Okay, so, you know, he made this point here that Krishna is Karunamayi, full of mercy, so why did he make the jivas weak? He made them as marginal, but why didn't he make them stronger? They're so weak, they can be covered. So he gave the argument that Krishna is Karunamayi, he's merciful, but he's also Leelamayi, overflowing with a desire to perform pastimes. And different pastimes are enacted in different situations. And he gives them ample opportunity in the world to achieve the highest perfection. And he facilitates them as the reservoir of mercy, that no matter how fallen the jiva is, Krishna provides him always a full facility to attain the highest perfection by appearing before him with his spiritual abode, his eternal associates, and one who takes advantage of that opportunity and sincerely endeavors to attain the higher position, he gradually achieves a state equal to the Nitya Parishads, eternal associates. So Vrajanath is dealing with his guru, but he doesn't understand yet, as perhaps we don't understand. So as a disciple, he raises his doubts to elicit further understanding. So Vrajanath then questions, but for the sake of Krishna's pastimes, why should the jiva suffer? Again, he can't understand it. If Krishna's all powerful, why does he create this condition where we suffer? And this is what the guru, Babaji Maharaj, answers. The jivas possess some independence. This is actually a sign of Bhagavan's special mercy upon them. Inert objects are very insignificant and worthless because they have no such desire for independence. Only because of the jiva's independence does he think himself the master of the world. So he's saying the greatest quality is the jiva's independence, and which makes him superior to inert matter. But at the same time, that independence it can be misused. So that's his first argument. Then he goes on to say, misery and happiness are conditions of the mind. Thus, what one may consider misery is happiness to one engrossed in it. Since all varieties of material sense gratification finally result in nothing but misery, a materialistic person only achieves suffering. So he's saying now, and before you raise your questions, we'll let Vrajanath, because he's very demanding. But at least this point here he's making is, when you do make this choice, He's not exactly explaining or answering why the jiva is suffering, but he's explaining how bad their choice is. But you consider misery as happiness, and then we do that all the time. Because I'm studying this as this point comes up again and again. We think that sensual stimulation and ego dominance are happiness, but they don't really deal with the flourishing of the mind. But yet we still think they're happiness when real happiness is flourishing of the mind. Such a simple point. I remember when I went to the university, I remember we had this philosophy professor. And it was obvious that he was a devout Jew. There was very beautiful girls in the class. It was a philosophy class that were getting high grades without even being there. And, you know, he really talked the hedonistic philosophy. I mean, basically, I remember him basically saying that sense pleasure is happiness. This is what Brajanath is, Babaji is saying now, that people sometimes believe that. So I just raised my hand and I kind of got incensed and I said, that's not true. If sensual pleasure is happiness, you can cure depression by giving someone ice cream cone. He really had no answer for it. I guess he wasn't a very good philosopher. But not only that, the temporary sense gratification and the temporary ego gratification attach one to the body, which is temporary and is also subject to pain, which is felt more acutely when you have the misconception that sensual pleasure and ego gratification is happiness, because it engrosses you more in the body. As I read in one commentary on the first chapter of Bhagavad Gita, a pinch of pain is felt more than a ton of happiness. So this type of happiness just leads to suffering. So a materialistic person only suffers. Think of the wealthiest people in the world. When I hear that they're atheists, I feel so sorry to them. Because no matter how much they're enjoying, it's their last meal. You know, in American prison system, when someone is executed, they have a last meal. How can you enjoy a last meal? Our life of enjoyment is a last meal. The end is abject misery. When that suffering becomes excessive, it gives rise to a search for happiness. And that's the purpose of tragedy and difficulties and suffering. When that plane of material existence due to identification with the body for suffering, when it moves so rapidly against our desires and causes so much distress and pain, then we really start to search. Well, what is happiness? It's certainly not my life as a Hollywood, Bollywood starlet with all my enjoyment and all my material success. I'm not happy. What is happiness? I really want to be happy more than anything else. Realizing that happiness is not what everyone thought it was, which is the power of sense enjoyment. And now I have power and I have sense enjoyment and it ain't so. Say it ain't so. It ain't so. So from that desire, discrimination arises. So we start to kind of search. from discrimination of research into nature, the ultimate reality is born. So what is our ultimate purpose? I remember someone called me that was in our ashram, someone put me in contact, who stayed in our ashram in Cali, Colombia, and said, you know, what is, you know, it's just, what is the purpose of life? Because it's certainly not material enjoyment. So when that result is there, one attains satsanga, the association of people, saintly people, whereupon Shraddha develops. When Shraddha is born, the jiva ascends to a higher stage, namely the path of bhakti. So he's explaining how suffering has a purpose. It's not all bad. Suffering has a purpose of happiness. Now he gives an analogy. Gold is purified by heating and hammering. Being opposed to Krishna, the jiva has become impure through engaging in mundane sense gratification. Therefore, he must be purified by being beaten with the hammers of misery on the anvil of this material world. By this process, the misery of the jiva is opposed to Krishna finally culminates in happiness. Suffering is therefore just a sign of Bhagavan's mercy. That is why intelligent people see the suffering of jivas and Krishna's pastimes as auspicious, though the foolish can only see it as an inauspicious source of misery. So he's saying Krishna's, when you talk about Krishna's pastimes, I think here, he's talking about this pastime of Krishna exchanging with his material energy to become Lila Maya, one who possesses, you know, all pastimes. This is one of his pastimes in which he dispenses mercy, dispenses knowledge, etc. So, what he's saying, the suffering is auspicious because it leads to, it's no cause for despondency, because it has a purpose to elevate one. So there should be no depression. But Vrajanath is not satisfied yet, so he's going to go on. The jiva's suffering in his conditioned state is ultimately auspicious, but in the present state it is very painful. Since Krishna is omnipotent, couldn't he think of a path less troublesome? I mean, he wants to bring us to happiness, but does he have to do it with the pain that we're experiencing now? Okay, the result is okay. That relieves me a little bit to a certain extent. I don't have to become despondent or depressed. It actually has a purpose. But why did he do it this way? Why did he do it this way? Vrajanath, the jiva's suffering in his conditioned state is ultimately auspicious, but okay, why do you do it this way? Babaji, this is one of Krishna's pastimes, which are variegated and wonderful. Since Bhagavan is independent and almighty and performs all kinds of pastimes, why should this one be the only one that he neglects? So he said, somehow or other, this is a pastime. And they're variegated and wonderful, and Krishna's descent in the material world to believe. No pastimes can be rejected if there is to be full variety. Besides, the participants in other types of pastimes also must accept some type of suffering. Krishna is the enjoyer, Purusha, and the active agent, Karta. All ingredients and paraphernalia are controlled by his desire and subject to his activities. It is natural to experience some suffering when one is controlled by the desire of the agent. I don't particularly understand that. And therefore, I have doubts sometimes about translation because I'm not reading it in the original. But we'll go on. We won't get sidetracked. However, if that suffering brings pleasure in the end, it is not true suffering. Just like if someone's kind of popping a boil, it may be painful, but if the result is, you know, that you got rid of something auspicious, I mean, that'd be one example, or you take some kind of, yeah, I mean, this is a strange thing, but I'll give an example of that. It's really strange that when I was in the Ashablas, Sham Ashram in Cali, Colombia, when I was in the ashram last, there was one lady staying there, and she was studying shamanistic medicine. So some people in the ashram did it. And basically what you do is you drink a lot of water, like a huge amount of water, and then she has this bark she got from the jungle, from some shamanistic thing. It has some kind of, they say, frog's poison. I don't know what that means. But it's just the bark, and she puts a little water on it, and she kind of scrapes it, makes a little paste, just a little paste. And then, and I don't know why it hurts, why it doesn't hurt. Anyway, to make a long story short, people asked me, they said it's very purifying, it's kind of like punch karma, you get rid of all your, you'll vomit all your poisons, you know, your body, you know, but it can be very intense and heavy. So anyway, I was so busy, but somehow or other the last day I said, okay, I'll try it. So she came into my room and some of the other devotees were like watching. And what she does, she has a little stick, like a piece of wood, like a little small branch, and she puts it in fire, and I don't know why it doesn't hurt. It's amazing. But she puts four holes, small holes, in your upper arm, your shoulder, and then takes the poison. Anyway, this is so. And she puts it in the hole, just like a little bit. I mean, I could, you know, maybe like a two drops of what she scraped. And then what happens is, so I'm sitting there waiting for the reaction. What happens is, all of a sudden your head starts to throb. And you feel this internal heat beginning from your shoulders starting to descend towards your body. It's really far out. So I just sat cross-legged, and I just breathed deeply, and I just was mindfully watching it, that this is very far out. This is the first experience I ever had, what it means to be poisoned. It's such a little something, and caused such a reaction. But anyway, somehow or other, even though I drank so much water, and everybody else did, I guess I was able to digest the poison or something, because I wasn't able to vomit. So they gave me another dose, and, you know, it was still pretty far out. But the point would be, is the, related to this, is that, you know, because I know it's related to a purging in some kind of higher state, then the condition doesn't affect you in the same way. It's not really suffering, because it's connected to real pleasure. And when you have that objective. I know even performing austerities on behalf of Prabhupada, traveling around India and successfully preaching and then riding back in a bus, which is horrible, I felt a certain joy because of the, what it was connected to, which was my service to Prabhupada. Anyway, that shamanistic thing was very far out, but you know, I had that realization. It's not suffering because the result is so good. So the suffering is really the mental thing. That's the point. This, How can you call it suffering? It brings pleasure in the end. The so-called suffering that one undergoes in order to nourish and support Krishna's pastime is actually a source of delight. The jiva's desire for independence has caused him to abandon the pleasure of serving Krishna and instead accept suffering in Maya. This is the jiva's fault, not Krishna's. Prajanath, what harm would there have been if the jiva had not been given the desire for independence? Krishna is omniscient, and he gave this independence to the jiva, even though he knew that they would be suffering on account of it. So isn't he responsible for the jiva's suffering? I'll repeat that again. Vrajanath is piercing intelligence. What harm would there have been if the jiva had not been given the desire for independence? Krishna is omniscient, and he gave this independence to the jiva, even though he knew they would be suffering on account of it. So isn't he responsible for their suffering? Babaji, independence is a precious jewel, the absence of which inert objects are insignificant and worthless. The jiva had not received independence, you'd also have become as insignificant and worthless as material objects. So again, independence has a greater value than non-independence, even though there's suffering involved. And the second, independence is a precious jewel. If the jiva had not received it, okay, the jiva is an atomic spiritual entity, so he must certainly have all the qualities of spiritual objects. The only difference is that Bhagavan, who is the complete spiritual object, possesses all these qualities in full, whereas the jiva has them to a very minute degree. Independence is a distinct quality of a spiritual object. And an object's inherent quality cannot be separated from the object itself. Consequently, the jiva has this quality of independence, but only to a very minute degree because he is atomic. It is only because of this independence that the jiva is the supreme object in the material world and the Lord of creation. So we have the qualities of God, and one is independence. The independent jiva is a beloved servant of Krishna, and thus Krishna is kind and compassionate towards him. Seeing the misfortune of the jiva as he misuses his independence and becomes attached to Maya, he chases after him, weeping and weeping, and appears in the material world to deliver him. Sri Krishna, the ocean of compassion, his heart melting with mercy to the jivas, manifests his achintya lila in the material world, thinking that his pastime will enable the jiva to see his nectarian, that his appearance would enable the jiva to see his nectarian pastime. Well, I just thought of one thing. If Krishna didn't give the jivas independence, then there would be no question of Prabhupada's pastimes and glories, which is dependent on compassion, which is dependent on objects of compassion. So I guess that's the argument here, that this is also required in Krishna's supreme lila of pastimes. It must be the pastime of compassion, which requires objects of compassion. However, the jiva does not understand the truth about Krishna's pastimes, even after being showered by so much mercy. So Krishna then descends in Srinavadvipa in the form of Guru. He personally describes the supreme process of chanting his name, form, qualities, and pastimes, and personally instructs and inspires the jivas to take this path by practicing it himself. Baba, How can you accuse Krishna of being at fault in any way when he's so merciful? His mercy is unlimited, but our misfortune is lamentable. Vrajanath, is Maya Shakti the cause of misfortune then? Would the jivas have to suffer like this if the omnipotent and omniscient Sri Krishna had kept Maya away from them? So to be continued next week. Okay, would anybody like to ask any questions? Would anyone please say hello?
Hi, Krishna Maharaj.
Hi, Krishna. Hi, Bogil.
Well, you know, Maharaj, it's been a while since we've had a super soul experience, but today it happened because I had to stop writing a letter in order to listen to the conference. And the theme of this letter was exactly, like, practically verbatim the theme of your talk today. It was amazing. I mean, I felt like you were just, like, reading my letter. You know, basically saying that, you know, our unhappiness is meant for happiness, basically. You know, that the anyway, something like that.
Well, that's, you know, great. That's great. I'm kind of feeling good. That last chapter was just, this is a difficult idea. You know, you don't see the person, et cetera, you know? And certain things don't lend to it. You know, you just can't read. You know,
yeah.
You have to explain and share your realization according to the audience. And so I really like this section. I'm kind of excited myself to discuss it. And that's good that you felt that way.
But, you know, despite my feelings, but despite that, I do have a question if I can still go.
About what?
Because I didn't say about what yet, but actually it's about what I was writing myself and about what you were saying about this, the fact that our unhappiness is meant ultimately for our happiness. Because I know you tried to present the argument as it was presented in Devadharma, how is it that the fact that our unhappiness is justified for the sake of Krishna's Leela, you know? And I don't know, somehow, you know, when you think of the most terrible tragedies in material existence, it's still difficult to
I agree. I agree. And also you throw into the fact that, you know, you can have independence without being presented with bad choices. But like God
say
is
that
independent,
again?
But does that mean
say that again?
You can be independent without being God, without presenting you bad choices. You know, I was just thinking of the fact of God Himself is independent, and but it doesn't mean that God can, make bad choices. Yeah, so it is a challenge. And I know that the thing I was reading lately, you know, the Christian philosopher, I forgot like what he wrote, but, you know, that we may not see the purpose, but God has a greater view of things, you know. But, I kind of touched the argument a little bit, and I kind of felt a little bit more satisfied with it when I discussed how the pastime of compassion and enlightenment requires ignorance. And, even Prabhupada's glory and his whole pastime and Lord Chaitanya's whole pastime requires souls that, make choices. You know, Shastra requires that. Shastra is very glorious, but there's no need for Shastra if it is not free will, the kind of free will and options to make choices the other way. So there are a lot of glorious things that we'd have to deny if God didn't have this pastime.
Well, I mean, at the risk of being repetitive, it just still seems that the pastime is happening at a great place.
What's that?
I say, at the risk of sounding repetitive, it still seems like that pastime, even the pastime of compassion, seems to be happening at a very great place. I mean,
I'm not disagreeing with you, but that's the best I could do.
One thing that I consider is that, I do hear that, once we get to the other side, we will feel that it was all worth it,
Right.
Like when we're in the throes of it, we don't see how it can ever, but once
right.
we get there.
Right. But yeah, now I'll pay devil's advocate, but there's some really heavy stuff that happens. But anyway, we went as far as we can go with this. Let's see what Brajanath says next week, because he has it, and what Babaji answers, because they're not finished. But I'm just ecstatic that this is a really good chapter. Maybe the rest of the Jiva Dharma will lend to more of a discussion, because it really had a lull for a while. I thank those people that continue to listen. Okay, anybody else say hello today?
Hare Krishna Guru Maharaj, this is Radhe.
Thank you for your steadfastness, and you're learning Shastra like this. That's great. Good.
Thank you.
And greetings from Govardhan. Anybody else like to say hello?
Hare Krishna Maharaj, this is Gopa Kishor.
Hey, Gopa, Hare Bo. We'll see you also. We'll see you also in India, right? In February?
Yeah, I'll be Vrindavan end of February into March.
When into March? Because I leave in March.
March 5th I come back. I think we may go to Jaipur for a couple of days, but mostly Vrindavan.
Well, maybe you can go to Jaipur at the end, because I'm leaving on March. I leave on March 1st evening or March 2nd or something,
Okay. Yeah, that's about when we'll
go to Jaipur. Okay.
Okay, good.
Okay, great.
What chapter were you reading today? 16? Was it 16?
16. Yeah. Do you have a place to stay yet?
What's it called?
Bhaktidham?
Not the M. I think that's the one. Yeah. Yep.
They have what's called deluxe rooms. I just stayed in one. Someone paid me for a day because I have a place to stay.
Right.
And they're pretty good.
Yeah, I think that's what we got, because I need room
good.
For the kids too. So.
Okay. Hare Bo.
Hare Krishna.
Okay. Anybody else like to say hello? Okay, we'll end for now. Bunch of complicated.